Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
And welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I am your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman, and I'm here today with someone whom I admired for so many years, Deborah Engelhardt-Nash. Welcome to the show, Deborah. How are you today?
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be on the show, and it's fun to be able to at least link myself back to my home state, California, where I'm born and raised. I'm a native. So it's nice to link through you back into California. So thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm really excited. So I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but so I went to dental school at USC, and we, in the basement, they used to deliver magazines, Dental Economics, Dentistry Today. And I was probably second year of dental school when I would, any chance I got, I would go to the basement, pick up one of the magazines, and I'd find articles that because I kind of had an idea of the kind of practice that I wanted to build when I graduated dental school, but I didn't know how to do it. And I used to, clip articles that I really enjoyed from Dental Economics. And I think one of the articles that I had for many, many years was an article that you and your husband wrote together. And it was in Dental Economics. I think I was in the second year of dental school. And it was basically an article about how to make your practice stand out from the competition.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
And I remember going off this like a checklist, create before and after picture gallery, use intraoral camera, which at the time, like that was most offices didn't use intraoral camera for case acceptance. It was just a very new thing at the time. Certain scripts for how to introduce the doctor, because a lot of times when, potential patient calls a practice and they ask some questions about the doctor, the person answering the phone doesn't even know how to sell the doctor.
Yeah.
And I literally took this as a checklist. And as I was building my practice, years later, I went off this. So I've been an admirer of yours for a long time.
Thank you.
But tell us, how did you end up in dentistry?
I would have never, my degree is not in dentistry or science or, I mean, I took geology as my science in college. I mean, I studied rocks, so it was crazy. But when I moved from California to Seattle, and I was actually my degree is in secondary education. So I was a high school teacher in liberal arts and drama. And yes, and I was lamenting, I think, one day at my dental office, the dentist was an instructor at the University of Washington. And I was talking about how I was substitute teaching. I was driving 60 miles one way to my job. And I was working at a college called Green River College. And he said, you would be great in a dental office. I said, dentistry? Really? Isn't that a science? And he said, it is a science, but there's a human component that I think you would catch on to very easily. And he had me take all sorts of tests, Myers-Briggs and the DISC test. And he had me, he did all these things. And I did a background check. And he was very, very thorough. And I was trained for chairside first. And so I'm a certified dental assistant office manager. So, because he wanted me to understand dentistry. So, he had me go through the program in his office. And since he was an instructor, I was certified through him at University of Washington dental assisting program. And then I matriculated from his office to manage another group. And there was a 4-man group that I managed in a little town of Ballard, Washington. And one of the young dentists said, I might be leaving and starting my own practice someday, and I'd love for you to come with me. And he said, it'll be a brand new practice. I don't know if I can even compete with the salary, but I certainly can do better with challenges for you. And he said, and if you do this with me, I will make you one of the highest paid office managers in Seattle. And he was true to his word. And he also said this, he said, someday you will outgrow my practice. And so when I was recruited out of an audience by Pride Institute, so I was a Pride consultant before I started my own company, I was recruited out of his office. He kind of thrust me into the speaker and said, you need to hire her. She should be with you. And so I went to work I was the Pacific Northwest manager for a consultant for Pride. So I covered Idaho, California, Northern California, Oregon, and Washington.
Wow.
I was over a lot. Yeah.
Wow, that's
very impressive. I decided, and the climate of the company was changing. Our values became a little bit incongruent with how we wanted to work. I mean, I understand everybody knows this, and even in dental practices, the larger your practice and the multiples that you have, the more systematic you need to become.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've got to be, it has to be repeatable behavior. So I understand that, that large consulting companies have to have repeatable systems, and they have to have a cookbook. But my concern was, what if the doctor didn't really fit the mold of the cookbook? What if their recipe was different? And how could you customize that? And there was not a lot of wiggle room in customizing the manual. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I want to be able to customize. What if they don't need 7 days? What if they need 4? What if they only want me to come in for 2? And that wasn't the program. Great, great systems, great processes, great people. But I wanted to be able to differentiate myself. And once again, in being able to customize the program according to the client's needs. And so I said, the only way I was going to do that is start my own company. And yes, I was sued for a non-compete agreement, violation of a non-compete. I won. But about 6 of us left within a 6-month period of time to start our own companies. So that's when I started in 1985 and hit the ground running, started consulting and speaking and doing my thing. And met a dentist from the South in 1990 and moved. We dated for 5 years from 1990 to 1994. We dated from Seattle to Charlotte. And then I moved to Charlotte and took my... And here's what's kind of the love story of this, of our conversation. I'm married to Dr. Ross Nash, a accredited fellow in the Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. Kind of a pioneer. He was taken to peer review twice in Charlotte because what he was doing was different. He was doing direct bonding, for heaven's sakes. He was taken to peer review for that. And we're both kind of, cavalier. We started working together in a fee-for-service practice. He is one of my main clients. He's not my only client. So I do work in the office. The great thing about working in the practice, the few days a week that I'm there, it's like a practicum for me. I still answer the phone. I still make financial arrangements. I have to help the new patient who calls. My favorite phone call is a new patient phone call, because my responsibility is to help them understand and appreciate and be inspired that they called the right office. I remember we had a new patient last week, and I never tell the doctor or the patient when they call that I'm doctor's wife. I mean, I call myself Deborah, and I call him Dr. Nash. And he came into the office, and he was talking about, he was interested in cosmetic and aesthetic dentistry. Interestingly enough, we can talk a little bit about that after this COVID crisis closure. we are swamped with cosmetic requests for cosmetic dentistry. So, but he said, they said, oh, this is actually Deborah Nash. This is Dr. Nash's wife. He said, you know, I didn't know that you were the wife. I just thought you were a good saleswoman on the phone. And I thought, that is great to hear. So I love it when patients say, wow, I was, not only was I interested, because obviously when we talk about social media, you know, it's social media that attracts, and or if the patient was referred by a friend, the first thing they're going to do, as you know, they're going to go to social media. So a friend refers your practice. Now that person is going to go and look, check out your Google reviews, right?
Absolutely.
And your site. Yeah. Well, then from there, they're going to either punch in a request to make an appointment. They're going to schedule online, or they're going to make a phone call. And now it's that person who's answering the phone that's going to make or break the deal, if you will.
100%.
Yeah. In fact, one of our, another new patient who came in and is doing 20 indirect restoration, she said, you know, my husband and I own a company. And one of the things I mentioned to him was how critical that first phone call is. It's absolutely critical. And actually, experts will say the patient makes the decision to choose you the moment they picked up the phone and called you.
Absolutely.
Now you have the responsibility to validate they made the right decision.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So we hired, years ago, we hired a bookkeeper, and she was great. She was trying to keep our costs down. She was looking at our numbers, and she said, you know, we could keep our costs down if you hired, you know, maybe just somebody right out of school, or somebody right out of high school, or with no experience to answer the phones. I mean, they're just answering the phones.
Just answering the phone. And you know, something interesting is, in a typical dental office, we hire someone, and a lot of times, especially if it's an experienced person, we assume that it's the right kind of experience, and we put them on the phone that day.
Yes.
That day, they're answering the phone. And we all have this experience when you walk into a new restaurant, a new place, within seconds, you know whether you want to eat there or not. And how
Absolutely.
Often do you walk into a place and you're like, I don't want to eat here, and you walk out, and you probably didn't even look at the menu yet. It was something about, the same thing happens during a new phone conversation. And I found that a lot of dentists will say that it's the highest no-show rate is new patients. And I think part of it is maybe they're putting them out too far. But I also think a lot of times something happens in that original phone call that maybe they still schedule the appointment, but after they hang up, they just don't feel right about the office, or maybe they didn't get sold on the office.
I totally agree. Well, I think one of the dilemmas in that first phone call is that so many people, and I want to go back to one of the things you said about, you know, doctors will hire someone. I had more experience than you've been alive. I've been around a long time. If I were to apply in your office, you'd say, oh my gosh, Deborah has like 30 plus years of experience. She's perfect. She doesn't have to be trained. That isn't true. Because I have to understand who you are, what you're about. So if I'm going to talk about you, I have something to talk about. So I would say, let's give them something to talk about. If I don't understand who you are, and I don't have a commitment and a passion for who you are and what you do, then when a new patient calls, it's going to be blasé. It's going to be boring. It's going to be gathering information, but not giving inspiration. So it's going to be, what's your name? What's your social security number? What insurance do you have? What's your address? Let me tell you what our policies are. Let me tell you, you're going to have to show up and do this, and you're going to have to come with that. And that is not fun. You've got to make that conversation meaningful and engaging, so the patient, at least the patient says, I want to meet that person that I just talked to on the phone. And he or she, they inspired me to want to meet the doctor. So my responsibility is to learn so much about you that I can say to a new patient, may I tell you a little bit about Dr. Dorfman? You know, can I tell you about her?
Absolutely.
About why she does what she does so well, and why so many of our patients love her? And then the patients go, what do they say? No, I really don't want to know. Yeah, of course I want to know. So sometimes people will say to me, and I get excited, I love new patients on the phone, but they'll say to me, does he pay you to tell me this? Or I bet he's paying you to tell me this. And I say, you know what? He does pay me to be here, but he earned my trust and my respect.
That's very important. I had an experience once. I had a patient in the chair, a new patient. She was so nervous. You could see her tremble in the chair. And I said to her, don't worry, you're in the right place. We're going to take good care of you. We're going to make sure that we, you know, address your concerns. And she said, I know you were highly recommended. I said, oh, who recommended me? And she said, Carmen. I said, oh, Carmen, my front office, Carmen. How do you know Carmen? And she said, well, I don't. But when I called and I said that I was nervous, she highly recommended you. She said you were the best with the nervous patients. And I was just thinking, you know, I pay Carmen to do this. I train Carmen to do this. But in a lot of offices, this doesn't happen. And there are cases where you call a dental office and you ask them about the doctor, like, what school did they go to? And a lot of times, like, it doesn't matter. But I think patients ask questions because they don't really know what to ask. And they start asking in hopes for information, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like an interview. Do you take my insurance? What do you have? Yes, we take that. You know, are you open on Saturdays? Yes. Do you do bleaching? Yes. And it's like, it's an interview, but we never take the time to sort of flip the conversation and start asking questions to find out what the patient is looking for. And then tell them how we're going to solve their problem, right? It's immediately like, what's your insurance?
Well, and I think that's the easiest question to ask. And of course, in my husband's practice, we're not in network with anyone. So if somebody calls and says, I'd like to make an appointment, and by the way, do you take MetLife? I say, I'd be happy to talk to you about how we handle insurance. Before I do, may I ask you a few questions? And then the most important question for me is, tell me what inspired you to call us today? Because there's a reason why, whether it's discomfort, whether I looked in the mirror, I've been looking in my mouth 3 months in my house, I've been wearing a mask and I can smell my breath, whatever reason that they are calling, there's a reason they're calling, and you need to find out what that is. So rather than spitting out protocols and rules and regulations, I need to find out why they're calling. So now my conversation will be directed toward, oh, you're calling because of this young man, Brian, who called, and he said, I said, you know, how did you learn about, what inspired you to call? And he said, well, I'm interested in cosmetic bonding. And I said, tell me more about that. See, tell me more about that. And
that's an excellent question.
He says, well, and he's telling me the story. I had it done, you know, like 15 years ago. It's starting to wear, it's starting to get a kind of stain, and, you know, blah, da, 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 da. And I've got time now because I'm off. And he said, I work for Wells Fargo. And I said, can I take a moment to tell you who you called? I said, do you have any idea who you just called? I said, you called the bonding king. I said, he teaches other dentists from all over the country how to do direct bonding. He has invented the materials that dentists use for direct bonding. I said, did you realize that? He said, well, you know, I knew I was calling that guy, but I didn't realize I was calling that guy. I mean, you know.
I love it.
So, I mean, he came in. He's a great guy. He's got peg laterals and, you know, accepted the treatment. So he is the one who said, well, I didn't realize that she was his wife. I just thought she was a great salesperson. So I think that the person who answered the phone has to be dental office. What insurance do you have? What's your birthday? Do you have any sexually transmitted disease? What's the man? And even nowadays with what's going on, and the COVID questions and the, are you going to be comfortable while you're here? And we have to, that person at the front desk has to be so engaged and so on point that phone call is as important to me as your handpiece is to you.
Yeah, I love what you said. And I love the verbal skills that you presented. And it works so well, especially in this particular example, because if you just answered right away, well, we are not in network, but we can take your insurance and we'll give you the claim. And then all of a sudden you're teaching this young man billing 101 instead of selling the doctor. And the reality is that insurance is probably not going to come into play anyway, because they won't pay for the bonding. Yeah. So you're just really talking about some x-rays and exam. And the problem that happens is when you first explain insurance, and then you have to backtrack and say, but we're out of network because we can't provide the type of quality that we want to provide under your insurance. And it's like you're apologizing and over-explaining, and it just doesn't work. But when you first present Dr. Nash as the expert, the go-to guy, like, if you want bonding, this is the person you're going to go to.
Exactly.
The insurance conversation is now secondary. It's not relevant. It's not the center of the conversation. And I think that at this point, you know, and you can say, yeah, and of course, we can always bill that to your insurance and they'll hopefully cover something.
And everyone can use this. And if anybody wants to say, gosh, could I email her? Would she repeat that? Or if I need to, so this works for every single dental office, whether you are in network or not in network. So here's what I say to patients. I will say, let me explain a little bit about insurance. We offer our patients a standard of care that will not be limited by the exclusions, limitations, or exceptions of any dental plan. We will do our very best to help you receive whatever allowance you have coming to you on your plan. But Dr. Nash made a decision over 40 years ago that he would never compromise his standard of care based on the limitations or exceptions of those plans.
I love that.
So I say we will electronically file for you to receive your reimbursement, whatever your company allowance has provided you. So, and then I, you know, if they say, well, what does that mean? Because I'll say, well, my insurance company says they'll pay 80%, and I'm happy to say, may I take a moment to tell you what that means? That means that they'll pay 80% of an allowance that your employer purchased for your plan.
That's excellent verbal skill, because they assume that there is a certain price that you should be charging and the company pays for that. I mean, obviously there are a lot of assumptions that our patients make about insurance, and educating them about how insurance works is a very important part. A lot of times we just give them a consent form with all of our policies, and it just doesn't make sense to them. So it, you know, they sort of buy into the idea that the dentist is overcharging because the fee is not the same.
Because the insurance company says, so when patients say, my insurance company says you're above usual and customary fees, and I will say, you know what, they may have a usual and customary fee allowance. I would hope that you have been able to witness that what we provide, what we offer, is absolutely above usual and customary. We intend to be above usual and customary, and we do things that may not be recognized by your plan. So I think that's an important piece. And one of the things that we basically say, I will also say to a patient, if you're choosing your dentistry based on the lowest fee possible, we may not be the office that you choose. If you're choosing your dentistry based on the quality of care that you're going to receive, the attention to detail of the doctor, the professionalism and the caring of the team, if those are important criteria, your comfort while you are in our care, if those are important to you, then you're going to want to be a part of our practice. Those are not easily recognized on insurance forms.
Very true. Very true. I love those verbal skills. One of the things that we say in our practice, and we are in network with a number of plans. But still sometimes our fees are a little bit higher for plans that allow increases, like Aetna, for example. But even sometimes they assume that the fee is higher for some reason in our office, even though, for example, with Delta of California, the fee is the same for everyone. Whenever a question of fees come up, we say we're very proud of our fees. We're not the highest, but we're not the lowest. And our fees represent the quality of care that we provide. And I think that we really need to sell that idea to our patients, because they don't know the difference. A lot of times they judge us by how clean the bathroom is. And like, if you look at the reviews, online reviews, most of the reviews are going to be about the patient's experience in the office, not the quality of care itself.
And you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, telephone skills, and I know we don't want to focus on, you know, COVID and coming back from COVID. But the reality is that right now there are amenities that we used to provide patients in office that we can't anymore. There are conversations that we used to have with patients that we can't anymore. We don't, first of all, because of the PPE, I'm trying to have a conversation with all of this. Isn't it amazing how we didn't realize how much we depended on seeing someone's mouth move to be able to hear? Because I'll take off the mask thinking I can't hear them well because I can't see their mouth. But my point is that because we are trying to schedule them appropriately with enough time to get in and out of the PPE and enough time to get them in and out of the operatory and out of the reception area, so we're safe distancing or physically distancing, we can't have those conversations. So when are we going to have them? We're going to have them on the phone. So the pre-call especially right now, one of my recommendations is that that you pre-call your patient, because you can't have a conversation with them as well as you used to. So when you call and say, you know, as a courtesy, we want to let you know things are going to look different. And when you come into the office, and you know how much we'd love to visit with you. And that's going to be a little bit more difficult in our garb. We're dressed like beekeepers when you come in. So let them know this is what you're going to see. It's going to look different. So let's have a conversation. Let's have a little bit of a conversation now. Tell me what's been going on with you. Tell me what's new. So because they want, and I, that's also an opportunity to allay their fears. So there are still some people who are reluctant to come in. There's some people who are eager to come in. Some people, they haven't been out for 3 months and this is their first outing. So they're excited. But I think that all of language skills for the team. So I think you're absolutely critical. I think it's critical for the person answering the telephone who gets the culture of the practice and who understands and appreciates what it is we have to offer. So when I'll say, you know, that, yeah, again, we're very proud of our fees. Our fees are a demonstration of the quality of care that we want to provide. And then we also say that we want to give you an opportunity to come in and meet us so that you feel comfortable and confident that you've chosen the right office for your care. We would never ask you to commit to any level of treatment unless you have an emergency until you understand and appreciate who we are and that we are your patient, your dentist of choice, your practice of choice.
That's excellent. Let me ask you a question. So obviously you mentioned a little bit about the, you know, the pre sort of pre-interview with the patient. What are the types of questions that we can easily ask? I mean, obviously you asking the first question is, why are you calling? What can we do for you? Why now, I think, is an important question. I know that a lot of the broken appointments are actually not, you know, and of course I own a company that improves, you know, communication, texting, all of that. But the broken appointments are not because people are forgetful. Broken appointments is because they have reservations about the treatment that we recommended. They had some unresolved financial issues. So how can we use that pre-appointment interview over the phone to minimize potential cancellations because we didn't address something that's important to the patient?
Well, I think good question. There are a couple of things. Depends on the type of appointment, but let's just talk about appointments in general. Once again, I love the fact that, you know, there are so many now, technology helps us verify appointments, which is amazing. It cuts down so much time. But I think there are also those patients that you need to be selective. And even though you may have, technology has helped you verify that appointment, I think all new patients should get a phone call the day before. So, and it could be from the doctor, it could be from the treatment coordinator. So it might be, if I'm the treatment coordinator, I might call you and say, Gina, hi, this is Deborah, and I am Dr. Nash's treatment coordinator. I have the pleasure of meeting you tomorrow, and we have reserved 10:30 exclusively for you. What questions can I answer for you prior to your appointment tomorrow? So I think it's important to say, I want to verify your appointment time. I'm not confirming the appointment. I want to verify the appointment time with you tomorrow. We have 10:30 scheduled. That time's going to be, it has been reserved exclusively for you.
Excellent.
What questions can I answer for you prior to your visit tomorrow? When the doctor makes the call, your likelihood of the patient canceling goes way down, man. When Dr. Nash calls the patient, he says, this is Dr. Nash. And he says, you can call me Ross. And they have reserved 11 o'clock exclusively for you and me to meet tomorrow. And I want to introduce myself and answer any questions you may have before tomorrow's visit. So I think that's pretty critical. I will have to also tie in. I think with hygiene, we say it's just a cleaning. And one of the big issues that has come up during this whole non-essential and essential, and we have been trying to train our patients for so long that hygiene is an essential visit, and then all of our governors said it's non-essential visits. So now we're going to have to retrain them again. So I think it goes back to letting them know, the fact that I can text the patient and say, you have, rather than this is just a friendly reminder, there's a company, not yours, there's a company that I took to task and I said, you're sending a statement to the patient, a text message that says, this is just a friendly reminder. You just minimized the importance of the appointment. Please change the wording to say, and they're not, we don't work with them, but I mean, just in general and in the industry, please change the wording to say, this is an important reminder to verify your appointment.
I love this.
It's not a reminder. So the word just made it sound like, you can show up if you want to. This is an important reminder to verify your appointment time, not to verify your appointment. Because some people's perception is, if I don't verify the appointment, then it will be canceled. Another important thing, yikes. How much time have we got tonight, Gina?
For you, anytime.
So many times I will hear, when I go into clients' offices, I will hear the receptionist say, well, we don't have any time available until such and such a date, but I can put you on our cancellation list. Which you are now just saying to the patient, it's okay to cancel because we have a list. So I can say, and so what I say to the patient is, especially right now, because we had how many weeks of no hygiene and now everybody thinks that they are a VIP and they should get in now. So I say, you know what, we'll be happy to schedule you. Sometimes we do have changes in our schedule. Sometimes we actually are running ahead. So if that happens, I'll make sure that you get a phone call and, you know, or with your permission, may I call you if we have a change in our schedule. I never say cancellation. I never say we have a list, ever. So that's another important piece. I think for doctors, especially for major treatment, one of the, I think you might agree that if I associate having to bring an initial payment in with a restorative appointment and I don't have that initial fee for that visit, what am I going to do? I have two choices. I call and cancel short notice. Or I walk in and I say, oh, I don't have it. And then you have to make a decision. Are you going to see them anyway? Or they call in or they come in and you thought you were going to be doing, a quadrant of dentistry with a 3-unit bridge. And they say, can we do some fillings instead? So I tried to disassociate a financial commitment on the day of the appointment. I'm not necessarily thinking that you have to do what we do. We have no accounts receivable. We send out no statements. Everything is prepaid. But we've worked hard to make that happen. And I'm not saying for small, not for hygiene and small visits, but for major restorative treatment, Dr. Nash did six direct restorations today. Her appointment was at 9:00. What if she had canceled? She was from 9 to 3.
It would have been, his whole day would have been gone.
His whole day would have been gone. Had she not prepaid, she could have got up this morning and said, I don't know if I want to really make that commitment. But if a prepayment, whether that be an initial deposit, an initial commitment, financial commitment, if that has been made, the patient is less likely to cancel. So I try and help my clients understand to disassociate a payment due at the first appointment. Because that's heartache. Yeah. That's heartache and heartbreak. So I think that's another reason why sometimes patients cancel short notice or we have cancellation no-shows. So once again, if you were my big case tomorrow, I would call you and say, Gina, this is Deborah from Dr. Nash's office. I'm excited we're getting started tomorrow. We have reserved 9:00 exclusively for you. The lab is ready. We've got everything ready to go. We've got all the supplies and materials that we need. I'm sure you are as excited as we are about getting started, getting the results that you've been seeking. What questions can I answer for you about tomorrow's appointment?
I love those verbal skills. And I think that if a patient has a reservation about the treatment, it gives them the opportunity to share their reservations, and then we can work with it. You know, there might be, do I really need this treatment? You know, you don't want the patient questioning this. And this happens actually fairly frequently when a patient comes to the appointment and then they'll say, so tell me why I'm doing this again.
Some people say, don't call a patient because that gives them another chance to unschedule. Listen, if they're going to unschedule, they're going to unschedule. How many times do you get a phone call that came in, or of course, or a text that comes in at 9 o'clock at night, and the patient says, "I need to reschedule tomorrow." So typically, I mean, again, the great thing about your system is if I get that call, I can call and say, "Oh my gosh, is there an emergency? Are you okay?" I don't want to bully a patient into accepting an appointment. That's the other piece. If the patient isn't ready, then we say, let's not start. So sometimes we'll get a little bit of pushback from patients, and they'll say, "You want everything paid up front, but what recourse do I have if I'm not happy if I've paid for everything?" And it's like, wait a minute, you're already wondering that you're not going to be happy, and you're going to use money as a, and we're going to hold us hostage with money. So I don't even go to Dr. Nash. I basically say, Mrs. Dorfman, if you already have reservations that you're not going to be satisfied, it would be better for us not to begin at all. Let's just not do this. And they go, no, I'm, you know. But one of the things you might even have noticed is I lowered my voice when I started talking to you. So we have a tendency when we are nervous or we are excited, we raise our voice. But if I'm going to have a conversation that I want to convince you to be back in the office, or that you are making the right decision, or I'm, you know, without being stern or to bully you, I'll lower my voice. And it changes everything when I say, "Mrs. Dorfman," and I slow my pace. "Mrs. Dorfman, if you have any hesitation or any, if you're already wondering what recourse you have, then maybe we shouldn't begin at all."
I love this. And I definitely feel the difference when you lowered your voice. It's like it draws the other party in.
It does. Yeah, it does. I mean, if you think about it, we were talking about this. We have visitors from out of town, and they have a little puppy with them. And just watching how the puppy responds to tone of voice and to your body movement, your body language, but mostly even my old dog, the way I say the word walk changes the way she responds to the word. People are the same. And I think that's critical when we are talking treatment plans to patients. And you mentioned something about telling patients your policies and your guidelines. And I'm always reluctant. First of all, there's other words for policy. So if I'm going to hand the patient anything, it's going to be financial outline or financial agreement or financial understanding. It's not a financial policy. It's not an office policy. It's an understanding. For our patients, it's an office agreement, it's an office understanding. So I think that's really important. If I'm going to have a talk to patients about financial protocols or office protocols, I'm not going to put a piece of paper under their nose and have them read it, because the minute I put a piece of paper under your nose, I've lost eye contact with you, I've lost communication with you, I've lost connection. Because you're going to go, you're going to look down at that sheet of paper, and you're going to look for the bottom line, and we're done. We are done. And if I hand you a financial policy that has, you know, four or five different payment options, I've lost all forms of negotiation. I can't negotiate with you anymore.
That's true.
I lost it. So my negotiation is, I will have those policies, those protocols, I'll have those forms ready when they're ready to be given to the patient. And I want to talk about something that happened that's going to be kind of important, but not related, but sort of related about treatment plans. But we're going to negotiate financial arrangements. So I'm going to give you my preferred option first. And I'll say, "Gina, most of our patients prefer to take care of their treatment at the time of service. As a courtesy to our patients who do that, then we do offer a courtesy fee of 10%, or I mean, again, whatever that may be, but I would say most of our patients prefer to take care of their treatment at the time of service. Or most of our, here's what we also do, so that our patients can reserve that time, as you know, you're going to be spending half a day with Dr. Nash. In order for us to schedule that time with you, we have you take care of the fees prior to that appointment." And I don't have to be apologetic about it. I'm the more matter of fact I am about financial arrangements, the easier it is. So I think that's, and then once the patient, well, do I have any other options? Of course you do. You know, tell me what, and then I'm going to ask the patient, "Well, tell me what you had in mind.
I love that.
And I'll say, well, I was hoping I could make payments on that. Well, what type of payments were you thinking of? Well, could I make $100 a month for on a $22,000 case? No. So we're going to talk about, you know what? We don't want to put you in an atmosphere of financial discomfort, and owing us that amount of money over a long period of time could compromise our relationship, and we don't want to do that. So let's come up with another solution.
I love this.
So now we can talk about other solutions. Now maybe there might be an outside finance company that would allow $100 a month or a little bit more, probably on that level of treatment. I kind of made that a big amount of money. So what I'm hearing you say, Gina, is you would like to make payments over a longer period of time than what our practice can accommodate. The great news is we have resources for that. We have a few. So let's talk about, so I already know that if the patient's already asking you to make smaller payments over a long period of time, I already know I'm going to jump to outside financing. I already know that. So I'm going to say, and oftentimes, if we talk about outside financing, oftentimes when we're making financial arrangements with patients, we say cash with a discount, half and half, 90 days, same as cash, 6 months, or the default is outside financing. It's like a punishment, So if you can't do these four things, then you're going to have to apply for outside credit, as opposed to putting it to the top of the list and saying, you want to make payments? We can accommodate you. There are so many great companies right now that offer outside financing for our patients who want to make smaller payments over a longer period of time. We're so excited that we could get to work with them, whether that be, and you have to be careful. You don't have so many choices the patient can't decide. So you have a few, because the confused mind always says no.
100%.
You give me too many options. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'll say, let me think about it. See, that's the hell, let me think about it. So I say, absolutely fun to think about it. I will tell you this, that we were talking about this the other day. It will never cost you less than it's going to cost you today.
That's true. That's 100%.
And in recall, when if the hygienist is talking to a patient with an outstanding treatment plan, that maybe was treatment plan 2 or 3. We had a patient yesterday who's now, she had her veneers done by someone else a long time ago. We've been maintaining them, and she's been talking to us about replacing them. And she had a treatment plan from 2013. So you can imagine what the fee was in 2013 and what the fee is now. And she's asking us to honor the fee from 2013. Well, we can't do that. But what we said is, so imagine had we done this in 2013 when you were first thinking about it.
Right.
Imagine if you wait for another 2 years.
Right.
It would never cost you less.
That's very true.
It would have cost you 7 years ago.
Yeah. And the treatment needs will change as well. So
the treatment will be. So interestingly enough, and I'm sure this is sort of a system thing, and I'm sure almost all your listeners, I know you do this. We always have our patients, when we present a treatment, we always have, once we talk about it, and then we show them their treatment plan, and we have them sign that they have received the treatment plan with the fees, and we scan that into the patient's records, and we have the treatment plan that we had presented in the record. So we had a patient, this is hilarious, she's been a patient she's the one who sold my husband the engagement ring for him to propose to me 25 years ago. And she's had veneers done again way back then, and now she's talking about wanting to redo them, and she wanted to redo her lowers, and we talked about that, and we quoted her the fee, and she said, and I'll tell you, the fee was $22,000, and so she said, I am sure that last time I was here, Ross told me he could do all of my lowers for $13,000. And we said, really? Oh my gosh, then we must have some notes. So we play a little bit naive. We must have a note on that somewhere. So let me pull up the treatment plan that we presented to you when you were last in. Oh, yeah, the fee is the same. Yeah, I see that, and you signed it. We weren't icky about it, but here's her signature. Here was the fee that was quoted.
I love this.
people, make sure that you have your patients sign the treatment plan when you're presenting the fee. So, because how many times, you probably don't do this, but I have clients who make deals in the operatories. Have you ever made a deal? I got clients, and I married a guy who makes a deal in the operatory, and it's like, we got to write that down, and it's got to be signed, and we have to have a record of this, because we always say the patient is right. So if the patient walks to the front desk, we say, oh, your treatment fee today is going to be $2,200. And they say, well, no, Dr. Nash said he was going to do it for 50% today. And we say, where is that written? Where is it? So we always say, you know, if it's not in writing, we typically will honor it. But we say, if it's not in writing, then there's the question. So make sure you're making any kind of special accommodations, put it in writing.
Absolutely.
That's pretty important. And be careful not to make too many, because that makes it hard for the team to quote fees.
Absolutely. I think it messes with the team's ability and confidence. And the worst thing is that the next time someone asks the team for a deal, instead of handling that, they'll now go to the dentist and say, what can I do? And so now the dentist is involved in, you know, deal or no deal. And so in my office, whenever a patient asks me about the fee, and asking about a fee is the buying sign, right? Like at this point, I've done my job. I'm going to take them to the front. And I like to do a handoff where I tell, the front office exactly what I want to do in patient-friendly terms so they overhear me, because that's another kind of opportunity to strengthen the treatment plan. But what I say to a patient is like, you know, let me take you to Deborah and Deb up front, and she will go over everything and figure out how to make this affordable for you. Those are my exact words, and we are done. I'm not talking about the fees. Knowing me, I'll probably just give it away. I know that the only way I'm getting paid if I'm keeping my mouth shut and let the ladies who are trained and good at this, handle the payment.
Well, and I always say, you know, you own your practice. And if you choose to donate your services for a cause or a person, you have that privilege. And I think that's exceptional. And we say that, I say that to Ross all the time. It's your practice. And if you choose to do something kind for a person, that's fine. And I'm okay with doctors, you know, be careful, make sure you keep track of it. So you can turn around and say, well, at the end of the year, this is how much you gave away. So when you're looking at your profitability, well, you gave $40,000 worth of dentistry away. And as long as you're okay with that, that's fine. But the problem I have is when patients take it from you because you didn't make really sound financial arrangements, or you put a patient in over their head and they couldn't afford it. And unfortunately, you know, they say, whoever they were who said this, it's not my original thought, but someone said somewhere that any strength taken to excess becomes a weakness. And I think sometimes, you know, that there have been conversations about people pushing patients into dentistry aggressively. There have been articles written about it. They typically will refer to them being, you know, big DSO organizations. I don't think that's necessarily true. That's not DSOs. It can be a private practice as well. Here's a couple of things that I am fortunate enough, and again, I have clients as well who have their own cultures and their own philosophies, and so I work with their philosophies and their cultures and what they want to accomplish. But I always say that the best advice I ever heard is never diagnose to pay a bill. Never push, because that is when that is the unhappy patient who says it wasn't worth
it. Absolutely. And how many times you see a review that, you know, that says a negative review that says, oh, they were a hard sell. And that
exactly.
And other patients, this is the thing that other patients actually believe when they look at the reviews. They believe when they hear it enough times, they think, wow, they must be selling hard. And what I really like is the verbal skills and kind of approach that you had with presenting the cost when you said that, you know, I give them what I'd like to do first, and if it doesn't work for them, then I would ask them what they had in mind. And I take similar approach to presenting treatment plans in the operatory. You know, first I don't go with you need a crown. I start with, you have, did you notice you have this maybe crack on a tooth? Does this tooth bother you? And a lot of times they'll be like, oh yeah, actually, now that you mention it, I do remember biting and it feels weak or whatever. Or maybe I have a metallic taste when I bite on it. But a lot of times they'll be like, no, I don't really have any problems. Should I be having pain? And that conversation allows me to explain the problem, explain why, you know, well, I'm glad it doesn't hurt now. That means we're catching it early. So it allows me to really explain the problem to them. And it's not until they ask me, well, can you do something about it? Then I go in with my treatment plan. And even then, a lot of times we have options. And what I've seen dentists do is throw as many options as we can do an Only or a crown. We can do a zirconia crown or an EMAX or PFM or God knows what else. Or we could, you know, maybe do a filling, but the filling isn't going to last as long. And we confuse patients. And like you said, confused people go home. They're not ready to say yes because they don't know what the options are. And sometimes asking people what they had in mind will give us a direction. They might come in and say, you know, I just got this insurance, so I'm finally coming in because I have this plan. So whatever the plan will cover is what I'll have because I have no other resources. And that will tell, now I'm not necessarily treatment planning that insurance, but at least it tells me the state of mind that the patient is in. And we can still talk about the optimal treatment plan, but I'm going to frame it in, you know, in their frame of mind, right? Not just giving them options.
I think another, for me, a nice way of opening the doors and having the conversations about the patient's treatment is to say, would you allow me to tell you what I could do for you?
I like this.
You know, get permission. So rather than saying, let me tell you what you need, I'm going to tell you, we're going to do a comprehensive. So this is what happens sometimes, a phone conversation. Doctor Dorfman is going to do a comprehensive treatment plan. She's going to do full mouth series of radiographs. She's going to do an intraoral camera photographs, she's going to do oral cancer screening exams, she's going to do periodontal charting, she's going to blah, 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 study models. It's like, no, Dr. Dorfman's going to take really good care of you, and she's going to do what is necessary to give you the information to help you make the right decisions for your care. We're not going to tell you what you need, we're going to give you information to help you make the decisions that's appropriate for you. So the patient's going like, so I'm not going to get pushed. So people don't buy what they need. Everybody heard that's so trite now. But when they say, we're going to give you the information to help you make the right choice for your care. Yeah. And then they say, so now, you know, whether it be elected or not, it doesn't even matter. Because people always say, oh, well, what's covered by insurance? What's not covered by insurance? Is a crown necessary? And sometimes in my seminars, I'll say, is a crown a necessary procedure? And people say, oh, yes. I'll say, no, it's not. Because there's other options. I mean, there are other options. I mean, right now, I mean, we've got a patient who is really seeking some holistic treatment. And she wants to do ozone endodontic therapy. And she's going actually to a holistic dentist who's telling her she shouldn't have a root canal. She should have an extraction because root canals are bad. And extractions and implants are good. And she's just like, I don't know what to do. I don't even know what to do. And you know, say, well, you have to do what you have the information, and now you need to sort that through and make the right choice, what's going to be right for you.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the piece of, you can't rush. I think the other thing that happens, it sounds like you are an exception, which is why you're successful, is that doctors try and rush presenting the treatment and get out of the room and give it to somebody else. And the doctor really should be the one that, if you and I are talking about what that, about this cracked tooth and this is what I need, you're the one I should be saying yes to. So once I say yes to you and you say, so what I'm hearing you say is you would like to go ahead and proceed with that. I'm going to have to figure out my finances. I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to be able to pay for this. And you say, you know what, then this is a perfect time for me to introduce you to Deborah, because she will work with you on how to make this affordable for you.
I love this. You know, you mentioned something. We started talking about cancellations earlier, and I remember, I'm not going to put anyone on the blast, but it was a very famous consultancy that put out a CD or DVD like back in the day, and I bought it because I was curious about it. It was $199, and it said something like, stop cancellations, last minute cancellations, and no shows forever, like 100% of them, which is not realistic, but I was curious. And one of the pieces of advice there was, turn off your answering machine. Because if patients cannot leave a message to cancel their appointment, they won't cancel. And that's like you mentioned there, where you know, some doctors say don't call the patient before the appointment because you enable them to cancel. That's lunacy. We're not addressing any concerns. And the real reason why most cancellations happen is because they start in the operatory. Something did not happen. The patient didn't say yes to the doctor. The patient didn't understand the treatment, why it needs to be done, why it needs to be done now. Or the patient got treatment that was not fitted with their image of what they wanted to accomplish with the dental appointment. And I think, you know, and again, it doesn't mean that we can give them what they want necessarily, but having that awareness, I think, is critical. That's how we start those conversations.
And you brought up a very good point, because for some patients, you have to say, based on what you're asking me, I don't think we're gonna be able to satisfy you. So it would be better for us not to give you. I mean, some patients, you've probably had the situation, I've had clients who have the situation, are gonna ask you to compromise in such a way that you know they're not gonna get the results they're looking for. You know that you're not gonna be able to satisfy them. And you just say, you know what? This is too much of a compromise. We're not gonna be able to do that for you. We're not gonna be able to satisfy you. Or and I think why an interview and a conversation with a patient before we promise any sort of level of care is, you have a patient who's starting to be really demanding, and you're gonna say, you know what? This isn't somebody I wanna see. There was a patient who, she came in, she was difficult on the telephone. She made her appointment. She drove away from quite a ways away, probably an hour and a half. And she came in and she immediately started countermanding our protocols. She didn't wanna sit in the consult room. She wanted to sit in a different chair. She didn't want to sit in the chair that the treatment coordinator wanted to put her in. She sat on the patient's, the dental assistant's stool. And I mean, it was difficult. So the treatment coordinator went in to get Dr. Nash. And she said, this patient has been very non-compliant already from the moment she's walked in. And he walked in and she was sitting in the dental assistant's stool. And he said, wow, I'm not used to meeting my patients here. And he said, this is unusual for me. And she said, let me tell you what you're going to do and how you're going to do it.
Wow.
And he said, let me tell you what's going to happen today. He said, you and I are probably not going to be able to work together. She said, I drove an hour and a half just to see you. He said, you should have been nicer. And at this point, I don't have to treat you because you're not a patient of record. See, if he had touched anything to her teeth, now he has to have a different conversation. So, she got up and he said, please, I'm going to ask you to leave my office because we're not going to be able to work together. I'm not going to be able to satisfy you. I can already tell. And she said, you go to hell, Dr. Nash. And he said, I'll see you there.
I love this.
So I think there's sometimes you have to say, we are not going to be able to satisfy you, and walk away, and it's not worth the money, and you'll probably end up losing because you're going to have to redo the case. Your patient's going to come back. They're going to come back over and over again, and every time you see their name on the schedule, you are going to go into heart palpitations. We're going to have to take your temperature and your blood pressure. It's not worth it. So I think that that's another important piece, that if you have a distinctive practice, we kind of went down a rabbit hole here, but let me bring it back. If you have a distinctive practice with a strong culture and a strong practice philosophy, you cannot waver. And your strength of purpose will make you successful. And if you think about that, the more, and you, Dr. Dorfman, you are in contact with a lot of practices, and I'm sure you will agree, the more purposeful and the more intentional the practice is, the more successful. We cannot serve all the people all of the time and be successful. We have to differentiate ourselves by saying, this is what makes us distinctive. And maybe what makes us distinctive is that we can serve a large mass of population because of how systemized we are and what an incredible team we have. I have an office that, I have a client, they have seven offices and they have 700 employees. And they do a beautiful job. And one of the ways, so I'm not suggesting everybody has to be a solo boutique boutique practice. And one of the reasons they do such a beautiful job is they understand their strength in purpose. So they'll say, each one of our locations, even though we have seven different locations, our purpose is the same.
I love this.
To serve our patients well.
I love this. And the article that I started talking about, this was called The Pursuit of Distinction. I just looked it up. So I love how you kind of brought this back to it. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you've got, and this is one of the things that I lecture about is for the need for the doctor to create a very vivid vision of what the practice is going to be like, and then communicate this vision to the people who are building this practice continuously, very clearly. They need to understand what makes our practice different, what makes our practice unique, because then they not only live it, but they can also communicate it to the patients.
And you know what? Gosh, this is interesting. This is so fun. We should be, like having a glass of wine and just spending the evening together. Because here's what's really interesting. The offices with whom I work, who didn't have a problem with bringing the team back after this, were the offices that had a strength of purpose and had great intention. The offices who didn't are typically, for me, it's only in my experience, are the ones who had team members who were reluctant to return because they didn't see the strength, they didn't see the purpose. So for them, it was a paycheck, and it wasn't, I'm coming back to do something good. I'm coming back to continue to serve our patients well. And I know that's a frustration for a lot of doctors right now of who's coming back, who's not coming back, and all of that. And I think once again, this may be the time that I have a strength of purpose and for my practice, and it's going to be stronger now because I may be starting to be more selective about the number of patients I'm going to see, the type of plans that I'm going to be able to have and work within my practice, the type of team members that they're going to be able to work with me. And that's all that goes back to distinctive. And the important thing too is to train team members on how to have conversations with patients, because once again, I may, as the patient, Dr. Dorfman, I may tell you things that I'm not going to tell your team.
100%.
And I'm going to tell the team things I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to ask the team questions like, is she really good?
Do I need this done? Do I really need this done?
Do I need this done? Is she fair? I mean, those are those questions the patient may not verbalize. But those are the questions that they have in their mind. Is she fair? Is she honest? Is she true? So one of the things when I'm introducing, when I say to the patients who call the office, and I'll say, can I tell you a little bit about Dr. Nash? I'll say, not only is he a brilliant dentist and he's an exceptional dental artist, but he is full of integrity and he is very conservative and he believes in saving as much natural tooth structure as possible while he's restoring your teeth and giving you the appearance that you're seeking. He is affable. He's humble. He's a great listener. You're going to enjoy meeting him. He doesn't have any ego about what he does. He's here to serve.
I love this.
And they're like, Now, at home, he can't change a roll of toilet paper, but at work, he's really good. We talk about this. He's like, I was in a new patient call the other day, and I said, and they said, he was highly recommended. And I said, he's a brilliant clinician, and I tell patients that. I said, I will promise you that, I've worked with him, and our team members will say that. Our treatment coordinator, Rhonda, will say, I've been in the industry X amount of years, and I have never experienced the quality of care that I've experienced here. And I will tell you that when he retires, if he ever retires, I will retire with him because I don't think I'll be able to find anything comparable. Now, what kind of testimony is
that? That's amazing. I absolutely love this. I think yeah. it's critical that our doctors train their team on having those conversations and share sort of their philosophy, clinical philosophy and customer care philosophy early on.
Doctors need to earn that conversation.
Absolutely.
They need to earn it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that it saddened me a little bit for some of my clients, not my clients, but when, you know, and you and I know how many Zoom meetings we've had and how many webinars we've done and podcasts. And when team members will come to me and they say, you know, in the 9 weeks we were out, my doctor never called me.
Wow.
My doctor never reached out to me. We never had a meeting. The doctor called and, you know, I got the letter that we were coming back and we came in for one day. And then I've heard, and I'm not going to make a judgment about what is appropriate PPE and what isn't. What is appropriate PPE is what makes the team comfortable, because when the team is comfortable and the team is confident, then they will represent the practice in such a way that the patient will be comfortable and confident. So some doctors will say, do we really need all that stuff? And I'll say, ask your team what will make them comfortable. So I have my client in Florida. He called me and he said, my hygienists want this evacuation system and it's X amount of dollars. I say, is she a hygienist that has merit? Is she a long-term hygienist? He says, absolutely. I said, is it worth $2,500 to keep her? Absolutely. So go, some people say, well, at what level do I comply with CDC and ADA? At the level that's going to make your team comfortable. Because when your team is comfortable, they will tell the patients, you will be safe. If the team doesn't feel safe, if the team doesn't feel like that their needs were heard, that their frustrations and their insecurities weren't addressed, then that is going to, either they're not going to come back, they're not going to stay, they're certainly not going to transfer confidence and security to patients.
Very true. Very true. Every single bit of it is true. And you and I talked about it before the podcast and our previous conversations that we had a very successful sort of return back to work. And I personally think part of it was that we were able to have those conversations with our teams,
right,
have ongoing weekly meetings and sort of, you know, elevate some of their fears and understand their fears. That's the first part is really understanding. I wanted to ask you, we're almost out of time and it's honestly sucks because I want to keep talking to you, but I have a question
We'll just have to do this again.
We absolutely should do this again because I haven't even gotten to most of my questions yet. But we need to talk about the elephant in the room. October. What are we going to do with hygiene in October? Like mid-September to mid-November, since that's how, you know, most practices were closed. Mid-March to mid-May or somewhere there. How are we going to keep our hygiene full? And then how are we going to make sure that, you know, our 2021 is successful, given the fact that we were closed for such a long time? So what do we do?
I think what's going to be really critical for a lot of doctors is a very strong patient reactivation program. Patients who fell out of the system, I think that's going to be absolutely getting those patients back. I also think that, you got to be doing some statistical analysis, some really in-depth analysis of the practice. So let's say, what is your capacity? We talked about this before, you and I, what is your capacity now? And do you have the capacity to see the number of patients that need to get back in? There are some doctors who are over capacity and some who are under capacity. So if you take a look at, here's the capacity that I have now. So I have X amount of patients who have fallen out of my system. So if you think about this, so those patients who fell out of my system, they didn't have an appointment during this period of time. They haven't had an appointment within the last 6 months. For me, those are going to be my patients that are going to fill my October. So because right now I can't call them. I don't have any place to put them. I'm trying to get those people that were scheduled in March, April, and May and the first part of June now into July, August, September, right? So who's going to fill my October? my patients who had been inactive, who weren't coming in. So I'm going to be having a strong reactivation program in my practice. So I'm going to say that, you know, that I'm going to want to know my capacity. Here's how many patients who are patients of record who have not been in the office in the last 8 to 10 months. And I'm moving them into October. So my conversation with them will start in July, which is
I know that's coming up. And
it's like,
yep. And my guess is that you're not having your team calling those patients saying, I am just calling to schedule a cleaning. Yeah. So what's a good verbal skill? How do we?
Well, the magic words when you're calling a patient for anything is, Dr. Dorfman asked me to call you. Boy, when you say, Dr. Dorfman asked me to call you, we've had a change in the schedule, and he asked me to hold that time for you tomorrow at 9 a.m., and he wanted you to have the first right of refusal. Man, you will move heaven and earth if Dr. Dorfman asked you. If I say I'm just calling because, who am I? But when I say Dr. Dorfman asked me to call. So for me, if I'm going to try and reactivate patients, my first contact is going to be through technology.
Right.
So I'm going to go through technology, and it may see we haven't seen you for a while. We would love to know your intent. I would probably go into more detail about why dental health, and we're concerned about your dental health. We're concerned about, you know, again, costs of care. And maybe we have now implemented, if I've implemented an in-office membership plan, what a great opportunity. If you haven't done it, if you haven't implemented an in-office membership plan, now would be the time to do it. And I would be contacting those patients and said, if cost had been a concern of you and you do not have insurance, we have an answer. Because we have now implemented an in-office membership plan that's going to reduce the cost of your care while you're in our office. And we are currently, once you, your membership is active the moment you join, and we are currently reserving these times for those patients who have that in-office membership plan. So any new technologies, any new advantages for the patient, I'm going to start going back to those patients who fell out of my system. The patients who are on pre-appoint systems, you don't have to worry about those people. So we don't need to call those people who pre-appoint all the time. We already know they're dedicated, and we already know they're fastidious about their hygiene. I want to call the people who fell out of the system. So I'm going to say, Gina, this is Deborah from Dr. Nash's office. He asked me to call you. He understands that it's been a while since we've seen you in the office. And in reviewing your records, last time you were in, you had some concerns about the upper right side. There was some bleeding, and there was a little bit of sensitivity when you had pressure, when you bit down on that side. We haven't evaluated that for some time. Don't know what the status is. Don't know if it's been bothering you, but Dr. Nash really wants to continue to monitor that. So I need to have a reason for my call. It's not just I'm calling to try to pull you out of the hole you fell into. There's a reason for my call. We really reviewed. So I need to review this patient's record. We reviewed your record. It's been a while since you've been in. And my other question might be to the patient is Gina, for some reason, it's been a while since we've seen you. What questions can I answer for you? Help me understand what has prevented you from coming back to the door.
Question.
Not is there a problem? What has prevented you from coming back in for your care? That's to me the most important question.
I love this question. And I always say it again, you know, my company creates a lot of the automated follow-up and reminders and recall and all of that. And a lot of times when we work with customers, they just want us to carpet bomb the patients with reminders. And I'm always saying, look, they got the email, they got the text message, they got the second text message. There is a reason why they're not coming in. Someone needs to call them. And make sure that they understand the reason that's keeping the patient away. It might have been something that happened at the last visit. It might be something that the patient maybe lost trust because of the recommendations that they didn't understand.
Oh, and again, there could be the person that you are asking to call the patient is the reason why they're not coming
back. That's true.
So there might be the opportunity of figuring out that, because oftentimes, you know, you will hear, you know what, doctor, you are great, but your person at the front desk sucks. know, she's mean, or they've never been able to handle my insurance properly, or every time I call, she sounds angry on the phone. So that goes back to SurveyMonkey, going back to doing a survey of your patients. But I think it goes back to going back to say to the patient, you know, Dr. Nash is concerned. It's been a while since we've seen you. Would you be willing to share what's prevented you from returning for care?
Excellent question. I am so grateful to you for all of this information that you shared. Your verbal skills are just golden. I can't wait to share it with our listeners. I literally hope that they take a paper and a pen and start writing those things down as they listen, because there's so much value you shared.
Most important was, is number one, what inspired you to call? Number two, we're not going to compromise our care based on insurance restrictions or exceptions or limitations. We'll do our best to help you get whatever. Would you allow me to tell you what I could do for you? We want you to feel comfortable and confident. We're going to give you the information to help you make the right choices. I mean, if they can at least get those little gems, and they'll see a major difference in the way the patients will accept their care and refer their friends.
And strike three words from your vocabulary: policy, just, and cancellations.
Correct.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.